Consequence Podcast Network.
Hi, this is Billy Idol giving you the story behind the song on Consequence.
To find out what's really going on behind the music, sometimes you have to dig deep. I'm Dr. Mike, and on the new season of Going There, we're doing just that.
Art or music can be your escape and your therapy.
Going There is the podcast at the crossroads of music and mental health, where we have raw, meaningful conversations with artists like Noah Kahan, Julian Baker, Jason Isbell, Youngblood, The Head and the Heart, and Bishop Briggs.
I recently heard someone describe grief as glitter, where you'll clean it up and then you'll find little pieces.
By opening ourselves up to these real discussions about mental health, we can foster understanding and gain even greater appreciation for the music we all love.
For me, like, my favorite songs give me happy tears.
So join me and some of your favorite artists on the new season of Going There with Dr. Mike, brought to you by Sound Mind Live and the Consequence Podcast Network. Subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of The Story Behind the Song. I'm your host, Peter Chatty of Creative Media, and in this episode, I speak with one of music's greatest icons of the past half century, the great Billy Idol. Yes, the name says it all. The look, that hair, and the musical talent and charisma to back it up. Born William Broad, Idol snarled and fist-pumped his way onto the music scene 46 years ago with platinum blonde spiked attitude and boundless talent. Together, Idol and Steve Stevens created a sound all their own, and White Wedding, from Billy's first full-length solo album released in 1982, is still one of his crowning achievements. Billy discusses the story behind how he created White Wedding, and trust me, it's a story that will surprise you, which is exactly why it's so fascinating to hear directly from the still very vital Idol. We also discuss Billy's thumping lead song Cage from his new EP of the same name. It's an interview of a rebel who still yells, but perhaps now also with a quieter voice at times. One of his new EP songs is Rebel Like You, and Billy wrote it for his toddler granddaughter. So take a listen as we dive into this latest fascinating story behind the song episode with the legendary Billy Idol. Welcome, everyone. We have the great Billy Idol joining us today for the story behind the song. Billy, great to see you.
Yes, hi there. Hi, everybody.
Billy, it's a real pleasure to have you on, and you are truly one of my favorite artists of all time, a real icon. I got to tell you one personal thing. So every Halloween for my days at college, I dressed up like Billy Idol. I was not nearly as cool as Billy Idol, but I dressed up like Billy Idol, and so those were my days of spiking hair. So thank you for inspiring me not only with your music, but as I try to make it make myself cool with the ladies.
Yeah, so anyhow,
thanks for coming.
We've both been enjoying it.
So everybody out there, obviously, Billy needs no introduction. Let's go from the very beginning, because I like to get a guided tour of the artists. Just from the very beginning, their childhood, a little bit about your childhood, growing up, how you got into music in the first place, and then we're going to dig into the songs themselves. So if you could just take me through that a little bit.
Yes, well, I'd lived in America for a little bit from the age of 2.5 to 5 or 5.5. And then I'd come back to England just as the sort of British music scene you know, the sort of early 60s, the Beatles, Stones, and everybody is all taking off. And so I kind of very much fell in love with rock and roll at that point. And then really I just spent the rest of my teenage years and, you know, young adulthood and everything, just, you know, really sort of just marinating myself in music, because that was the only thing that really sort of made any sense to us. I mean, me and my friends that I had at the time, it's just what was gave us the music revolution that was going on was the most exciting thing. And yeah, the music of the 60s, and then gradually sort of discovering punk rock and stuff, you know, the Velvet Underground. And and then the Stooges and then Bowie and Roxy Music and all the glam rock and everything. But music was very much what we were, that's what we lived for. It was like, you know, that was, it was the only thing that sort of made any sense really to us. And just going to see groups. And so, you know, of course we always dreamt about being in a group and stuff. And I started teaching myself guitar at 10 years old. And so, and I was listening to all different sorts of music because I was learning to play the guitar, you know, so you're listening not just to hard rock or whatever, you're listening to folk music and acoustic music because you're listening, you know, finger picking. So there's lots of musics I listened to. And then eventually I started to realize, well, I'm never going to be the greatest guitarist, so maybe simpler music is the way to go. And then punk rock was starting to happen, you know, and that spoke a lot to me as well because it wasn't quite so, yeah, you could get away with three or four chords and stuff. And because there's some of the musicians in the 60s were so super musicians, Jimmy Page and people like that, super musicians. I mean, they're fantastic. Yeah. How the hell could you even begin to think about playing the guitar as good as that, you know, like, or even sing like Robert Plant or something, you know, so out singing right. So astronomically out of this world. I mean, like how the, but you could sort of, but you could listen to Iggy and you could kind of go, well, maybe I've got more chance of, I'll never be like Iggy either, but maybe I've got more chance of being something of my own, you know, and, but so listening to people like the Bowie and stuff, I mean, yeah, I couldn't even sing like Bowie. So is he Lou Reed, though? I could sing more like, yeah, Lou's not going all over the, you know. So you sort of gradually over time, you sort of started to find things that you went, well, I can't do that, but I can do this. I can't do this, but I can do that, you know. Maybe over time, you just started to sort of didn't realize you were doing it, but you started working an instrument in yourself, you know, a vocal instrument. And then you really, when I got in Generation X and stuff, could I really sing? No, I couldn't really. I mean, that's what was fantastic about punk was he didn't have to, you know, it was like, no, in fact, he was the opposite. It was like, no, it's better if you can't sing. So it was great. So it was a great way of starting out, you know, and, but the thing was that, you know, we love music and we wanted, you know, we'd grown up watching other people write songs and always dreaming about writing our own. And then when I met Tony James, we started writing our own songs. And then we found out we were doing it. You know, we got in a group, we started our own group eventually, Generation X. And it was really exciting. And it all led to me having a solo career. Right. When I came to America and with MTV and everything, and I was trying to write songs for my solo career, you know, for me. And I was finding it very difficult initially because I'd always written with Tony James and stuff. But when I came to write White Wedding, my producer, Keith Falsey, he put me in the studio because we'd done quite a lot of the first Billy Idol solo album, but we needed a couple of songs. So he put me in the control room with a drum machine, my guitar, and said, come on, you've got to come up with something. We need more songs. And my sister was sort of getting married in England. And I don't know why that was just on the forefront of my mind a little bit. And so I wrote to the top of this sort of foolscap, yellow foolscap, White Wedding, you know. And then I started to think about, well, you know, my sister was actually pregnant at the time she was going to get married. So I was thinking, wow, in the past, that would be like a shotgun wedding and stuff, you know, wouldn't it? I mean, there'd be someone saying, you've got to get married, you know.
Yeah,
whereas
yeah.
They were perfectly happy about getting married. But I was thinking about more like how it was in the past a bit. And I was thinking more like, what if she had a brother who was like super jealous, almost incestuous relationship? I don't know why I thought all of these things, but an incestuous brother, almost like Clint Eastwood, revenge killer coming back.
Yeah.
And you've taken my sister away. I don't know why I was thinking of these things, but I just thought, yeah, all these weird, you know, just almost trying to write, you know, the opposite, and not, you know, like the opposite of a wedding song.
Of a beautiful wedding song, right? Into something like a rebellious rant, right?
Yeah, sort of a gothic wedding, you know. And Yeah, more like, what have you done? You know, you've, so it's more of a shotgun wedding kind of. And
do you remember, Billy, when that, okay, so this was a reaction to your sister's wedding, and you were thinking of a white, you were thinking of a wedding, so you wrote down something that just said white wedding. And then yeah. you were, as you said, you were kind of in the studio, you were trying to formulate additional songs for your album, your solo debut full-length album. But how did, and did these thoughts of like gothic and something different, did they just, do you remember when that happened or how it happened? Or did, tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I think just the world we were living in, you know, the sort of, the I'd come out of the punk rock world and stuff, and I brought a lot of that into my solo career, really, not so much musically, but maybe attitude-wise and just sort of imagery.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, it was just like, yeah, you know, one of the things, say, you know, think about Public Image, Johnny Rotten, you know, this is not a love song, you know, you're writing the opposite, you know, and Eyes Without a Face is kind of like a murder song. It's a murdering love song, you know, it's the opposite. It's like, and I think I was doing that with White Wedding. I was thinking, how do, my sister's getting married, but I'm going to take this dark vision of it and turn it on its head. Turn, instead of it's White Wedding, woo, it's all wonderful. It's more, it's like, why, it's evil or something. Why, I thought, don't know why. It's just that what I was doing with a lot of things at that time. Sort of turning them on the on their head, really, like I did with Eyes Without a Face. It was like, yeah, I'm going to write, you know, a murdering my love song, you know. So
was it the music? Did the, like, the guitars come to you first, or did you write lyrics down first? How did that all happen?
I was kind of doing it at the same time because I was basically in the studio with a drum machine, and I could turn the, you know, recording machine on. So I was just playing along to the drum machine on my guitar. And I just, yeah, just played something really kind of really simple. You know, I was thinking like of Dancing With Myself. How can I write a follow-up to Dancing With Myself? That would be a big part of my, you know, I'm thinking, how can I write something as good as, that's the follow-up to Dance, because I hadn't done that yet. I hadn't really written a follow-up to Dance With Myself, something that was a similar kind of idea, but in a totally, but thematically a totally different song, but musically a bit of a similar idea, you know. How can I write something like that? So I just, it's basically, Dancing With Myself is basically a 3-4 chord trick. So I was thinking about that with White Wedding. It's going to be really simple. It's 3 chords or something. So I really started playing B, what, Rebel Yell, White Wedding, Rebel Dance Myself, they're all in B, they're all EAB or BAE or kind of a similar chord, just very simple chord structure. And then, so I was just going round B, E, A, I think B, going round those chords. And then after a little bit, I don't know why, I started to sing, hey, little sister, what have, you know, because it's this shotgun wedding. It's not supposed to be happening. I'm Clint Eastwood. I'm the brother coming back seeking revenge, maybe on the boyfriend. I don't know why. But I just was thinking of all of that. And so the first thing came out on ding, 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 kind of sort of pulsing on a B was, hey, little sister, what have. It's almost like a folk tune. When I thought about it, I thought, when I think about it today, you go, it's almost like a folk song tune. It's not really, you know, anyway, but I started with that, hey little, I got that, hey little sister, what have you done line. And then something about, I was beginning my life again in America. I was with, by going solo, I was beginning my life again. So thematically, start again, you know, why not forget this, start, I'm starting my life, I'm starting again. So when things go wrong, don't think it's over, start again. So maybe I put that in. And then, of course, I just sang White Wedding, all evil. And then after a bit, I'd recorded myself playing, you know, this kind of verse. I'd, hey, little sister, what have you done? I'd come up with. And I had the start again, and then the White Wedding. I thought, I just, and now I need, now I need the musical hook on the guitar, Well, if the song's in B, so I just started to play down the B minor chord, ding, dong, ding, boom, ding, up and down it. And it sounds like a spaghetti Western. And I'm thinking Clint Eastwood. I'm thinking, I love, you know, Ennio Morricone, and I loved all that music. So I'm a little bit thinking of it's Clint Eastwood. It's kind of revenge. He's coming, it's a Western. I was in Los Angeles. I'm out West. I started to play that down, 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 boom, ding, 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 boom, ding, because it's just up and down the B minor chord. It's really simple. Anybody could do it. It's almost stupid, actually. But I went, wow, that's actually. And then later on, Steve put the da 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 da. You know, but I ding, 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 boom, ding, 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 because I. And I thought, it's like the you know, a few dollars more or something, you know, whip crack. And I was just thinking all that stuff. And, you know, I was actually putting these ideas on top of myself. So, you know, after a bit, when I next came out of the studio, after about 20 minutes, half an hour, I came out of the studio and said, my producer was sitting outside reading a magazine. I said, "Teach, I've done my homework." And he went, "Oh, no, come off it. You can't have done it. It's only been half an hour." I said, "No, but I think I've got all the pieces." And so he came in and I had about a 20-minute thing. We made a 20-minute version then, you know, of all these pieces that I had. I had the verse bit, I had the white wedding, I had the start again, I had the ding, ding, ding. But when we started to put it together, we had sort of put like a 20-minute version, which I think is going to come out on, we're going to re-release this first Billy Idol solo album. I think it's going to have the demo.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's this 20-minute version of it where all the pieces are there, you know. And I took it to back to the hotel that night because we were in Los Angeles recording the first solo album, and I played it to Steve and then, "Let's record this tomorrow." And he said, "Wow, this is great, Bill, you know, sort of thing. Let's record it tomorrow." So that's what we did.
So you knew that you had, first of all, this came together really quickly. All these thoughts were in your head and it came together really quickly, like you said. And it sounds like you knew you had something here.
Yeah. By the time we finished that 20-minute, me and Keith both knew, wow, we've got the single we're looking for. We've got the thing we can really hang this album on, really, because up to that point, we had Hot in the City. I've got to say, we did have Hot in the City.
I remember Hot in the City was all over the place before. It was all over the place. I remember back as being a young guy in Minneapolis, like, you know, Minneapolis, and every city had the different kind of call out for it, but very different song than White Wedding. But so I was going to ask you about Start Again. And it's fascinating to hear that both White Wedding, well, and Little Sister is actually your sister. So it's literally your sister. And then Start Again was the way you described it. So I didn't know how that came to you, but it's fascinating to hear you tell that story.
Yeah, a lot of it to do is what I was in my life, what was going on, and that I'd sort of I'd restarted my career in a way by coming to America, and I was literally starting again. So why not celebrate that a little bit, and maybe it was saying to everybody, if your marriage goes wrong, we're in a divorce culture in a way, start again. But my life was, my life, I've restarted my life. I've restarted my career, and look at what's happening. You know, my marriage fell apart, Generation X fell apart, but my new marriage with Steve Stevens going strong, I don't know.
Perry Lister, the relationship you had at the time with Perry Lister, who was your girlfriend at the time, is that right?
Yeah, she was actually in a dance group which were really big in England, Hot Gossip, and they were on this show, the Kenny Everett video show, where in the middle of the show, they would always, David Mallet, the director, would do he'd have the police or someone doing "Don't Stand So Close," and it would be like a, you know, it'd be a music clip that, you know, they basically played out some kind of scenario, you know, using the Hot Gossip dancers. And then I met Perry Lister, you know, she was one of the dancers and she'd become my girlfriend and stuff. And then She knew David Mallet, of course. So that's how I got to know David Mallet. And then the video was just a follow on from all the ideas when I was writing the song. You know, like, yeah, it's a revenge thing. It's slightly dark. It's a little gothic. It's still bringing the punk ethos, the punk attitude, really, even though it's not a punk song, but it's bringing that punk darkness. Maybe a little bit of the drug culture I was in a bit, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a little bit taking drugs, so you're a little bit, there's a dark side to that. You know, you're experimenting with your life. It's a little dangerous. So maybe I was bringing that into it. That's a little bit of the dark side. It's you're the brother's the evil guy. It's my sister, you know, it's not. It's me. I was the one who's caught up in the sort of dark side. You know, that's really what's going on.
And tell us about the ring on the finger.
Yes, that was really her idea. It was Perry's idea because I married her in the video. We had this sort of gothic kind of wedding, and we got sort of some of our friends on one side of the aisle were all dressed up like in punk rock and all sort of extravagant fashions. And then on the other side of the aisle, they were very straight, you know. So it was supposed to be this marriage of some, this horrible wedding where, you know, yeah, I was this evil guy marrying. Kind of, and then you even put a barbed wire ring on her finger. It was Perry's idea, though. It was the lady's idea.
Everybody out there, and tell me if this is right, Billy, but what I read was that was a real barbed wire ring. And so when you put it on her finger, that's real blood in the video. Is that right?
It was fake blood, really, I think.
Oh, well, okay.
That's how much fun people were having with the videos, that they thought things like that.
Yeah, well, yeah. Either way, it's one of the most iconic videos of all time from MTV. It's a great video. And all the imagery, like the arms going out, which can be interpreted in different ways, you know, from the people in the audience. But fascinating. And so what I'm going to do, Billy, is we're going to get into the second song. But thanks for taking us through that story. We're going to take a quick short break, and then we'll be right back with Billy Idol. And we're going to speak about the second song, which is a song he selected called Cage from his new EP, The Cage. So hold on. Okay, we're back with Billy Idol, and we're going to talk about the story behind the second song from his new album, The Cage, his new EP, The Cage. And Billy, first, before we get into the song itself, the name of the album, tell us just about like the background of the album itself and why it feels the way it does, and just, you know, the kind of the theme behind it, if there is a theme, and then we'll get into the song.
Well, yeah, I mean, I suppose we're sort of talking about, you know, breaking down barriers you've created, or barriers that society is putting up, or that circumstances in society have created, in a way that the pandemic created us, you know, where we had to stay locked inside and kind of held in, really. And by the time we were writing, it's actually an EP is what we're putting out. It's the Cage EP. Which eventually we will put the Roadside EP, which we did last year, together with Cage, and a third EP as an album. But at the moment, that's what this is. It's a four-track EP. Cage was very much, when we started doing the first EP, the Roadside, you know, the coronavirus was very new, and it was too new to write a song about it. But now when we came to do this EP, we'd now been living with it for like 2 years or year and a half, 2 years. So year and a half at that point. But so we'd really live with it. And we really knew how we felt about sort of the lockdowns and just feeling held in. And we started to sort of talk about, how it's almost, we felt so locked in that we feel like the zombies at the windows. We're finally making friends with them. We've been surrounded by them for so long, you know, like as if we're in the Night of the Living Dead, you know, forever. And then Steve was saying how, you know, where he lived on Sunset, all the the storefronts had been boarded up, you know, because nobody was shopping or whatever. And so we'd, in a way, we'd boarded up our ambitions, you know, our ambitions for life had got shut down. And the demons have become my friends. The zombies at the window say it's finally the end. So I'm kicking down the door and never closing it again. Yeah, you know, I'm just sick of the lockdown, really. And just made you feel like you just want to break out. And sort of the EP is a little bit about that, really, in some ways, because even there's another song on it, Running from the Ghost, that is a little bit about celebrating us kind of putting our drug addiction in the rearview mirror, you know. So the ghost is the drug addiction that we've sort of we were sort of a little bit into in the 80s, which we sort of somehow, I think me and Steve have both sort of come a long way toward putting that in the back rearview mirror. So yeah, we're talking about breaking out of things, and the song Cage is really about that. It's really about, yeah, we're now kind of breaking loose after the pandemic. You know, we're starting to feel the freedom and yeah, and enjoying it, really. And that was it's a killer song. And then the video came out fantastic that we did with Steven Sebring. It's come out fantastic. So
yeah, I just watched it, and the song I've been listening to, it's a great thumping song.
Yeah, it's a really, you know, fun song. I think it's in the sort of Billy Idol tradition, sort of follows.
Oh yeah,
I think we've found a way to sort of do what we've always done, but sort of revitalize it where it feels fresh.
Mm-hmm. With whom did you work, and how do you think that shaped the sound on this one?
Well, that's right. The the Roadside was really the last EP we did, like came out about a year and a half in June. Butch Walker produced that, but we worked with on the song Bitter Taste. We worked with these young guys, Tommy English and Joe Janiak, and so we started to write with them for the KGP. And then me and Steve started to realize that, Tommy and his friend, Zach Safini, yeah, that they're producers, really. So as we were writing, we were sort of recording as we wrote, which is really how we always recorded with Keith Forsey. We've always done that. Some sort of modern way of recording, really, is you kind of record as you go. So we were doing that with Tommy, and then we were sort of realizing what he's producing, really. It's great, you know. So we realized these guys are a great team to work with, not just songwriters. They're a great sort of production team, Joe and Tommy and Zach, you know, Zach Savini. And it's just worked out really great. And they've got like an encyclopedic knowledge of music. So maybe, you know, we've lived alongside it. But they seem to have know as much about it as we do, as much about the music scene as we do, and so they've sort of drunk it in a lot. So we've
and also your music, you know, very deeply, I'm sure, because it has impacted the whole culture. You know, I have two young kids who are 22 and 19, and they grew up with Billy Idol music around them. So Billy Idol music is just part of the kind of the zeitgeist, you know.
Fantastic.
So, yeah, well, I hope they brought that in.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I hope we're sort of keeping on, doing stuff that, yeah, is kind of in keeping with what we've done before, but it sort of has a freshness to it, and it just haven't quite done a song exactly like Cage before. We kind of have, but well, I think we've definitely got the combination of it's kind of coming at you. It's a bit more rock and roll, but we've got it's a great tune, a great melody. Great lyrics. And so, these guys are fun to work with. It's like if there's a good idea that we're all kind of putting in bits and pieces too. It all happens very organically. So all of that, I think, is helping to make the recording sound very exciting. And we're excited as we're doing it. There's no long gestation period. It's all happening. I mean, I probably sang these songs five times, maybe. And that's what you're listening to. And then somehow we were so invested as we were doing it that I didn't need to sing them loads of times because I was nailing it. I was nailing what we needed to do as we were doing it. So, yeah, as we went, we nailed things and it just seemed to be coming out great. And is just because I got a bit of a nasal infection, an MRSA infection, that it took a bit of time to release this EP. We would have put it out last February or something, or June. It would have come out in June. It's coming out on September the 23rd. We would have put it out in June, except I got this horrible MRSA sinus infection that took about 4 or 5 months to, you know, the antibiotics just took a long time to really get rid of it.
Did that song, Cage, was that a collective, collaborative effort in terms of the music and the lyrics? Or
yeah, most definitely. Yeah, we were just all putting in bits and pieces, you know.
Okay, gotcha.
Like, I would say something about, something about the Night of the Living Dead, you know. We go, yeah, it's been like we're living and the zombies are outside or something. Yeah, we've got to make friends with them because, like, you know, we've been living with them so long. And then Steve would say something like, yeah, and down Sunset, all the windows are boarded up. And it was like, yeah, we've boarded up our ambitions, you know. So, and then, yeah, when we kick down this door, we're not closing it again, you know.
Right. I don't think people are going to allow that to happen. So, and then I just want to make one note. It's a great kick-ass song. Not surprisingly, it's a great kick-ass song. Everybody can crank that at home. But there's one more side that I just thought was interesting, if it's right. On the EP, a song called Rebel Like You.
Yes.
So who's that about, Billy?
Yeah, well, I mean, when you listen to the lyrics, you think it could be about any kind of super fan who might come to a Billy Idol concert, who's kind of dressing like me and done their hair like me. But actually, what it's about, my little granddaughter, Poppy Rebel. She was only a year and a half, but she came to my shows in Vegas, and she came to two shows. And one of the shows, her mother dressed her up like me in the Dancing With Myself video. So she had that kind of skeletal top on, you know, that, and black pleather pants and little Dr. Martens and a little glove. And she had her hair.
Classic.
And she had a little female clasp in her hair and stuff. She looked lovely, she was seeing granddad, what granddad does for a living, you know. And we started to write this song, and it was I said, well, what about, you know, the lyric, what about this? I never thought I'd ever meet another friend like you, I was saying to Joe, you know. And then he said, well, what about Rebel? And I went, I never oh great, I said, if it's Rebel, we can write it about Poppy Rebel coming to visit me in Vegas. So yeah. It's a little bit, you know, tongue in cheek about, it's really about my little granddaughter and just,
that's classic,
how excited she was, and then her looking like me. And so it's really and she's Poppy, her name is Poppy Rebel. So
no, that's wonderful. I think that's such a beautiful thing. And to think of Billy Idol as a grandfather, wow. Tell me about just Steve Stevens, such a integral part. You two have been partners for so long, kind of like the, almost like the Lennon and McCartney of pop punk, right? You know, it's, you guys have been together forever. So how did you meet? Because I think you met after Generation X, right? So when you came to America?
Yeah, actually, I had a manager, Bill O'Coin, who lived in New York, and he knew Steve, really. That's really how we met. And but it was perfect because initially we had a really great meeting, and I said to Steve, you know, really, I've got this, I had a song out, Money Money, out at that time, on an EP back then. We were doing EPs back in the early 80s, you didn't need me, don't stop. So I said to Steve, you know, Steve, I've got this kind of EP out, and I really need a band. How about, you know, you help me put a band together, and we'll put this band together, and then we'll see, you know, if you dig in what we're doing as we put the band together, and we write songs together, or write songs and we'll see if we can write together. You know, if you dig in what we're doing, we'll stay playing together. And really, that's what happened. We put the group together, and we did that first Billy Idol solo album that had White Wedding on it. And it was just, it was working, you know. And I was writing with Steve, and it was just a lot of fun. So it carried on.
You clicked right away with him, it sounds like.
Yeah, and once I saw what Steve could do musically, I realized with this guy on guitar, I could go all over the map musically. Anything I wanted to do, we could achieve it. And also with the producer I had back then, Keith Falsey, I knew with Keith and with Steve, I could live my musical dreams, basically.
Yeah. And just really quickly also, Generation X, your band before going solo, was a very successful band. And so you did, I think it was three albums that you created together as a band, Generation X, and then you left. What was it that led you to leave the band and go solo?
It's really just that it kind of dissolved over time a little bit. I was writing songs on my own. I'd started to write things like The Untouchables and a few songs on my own. And I was kind of enjoying that. I started, see, Tony, in Generation X, Tony wrote the lyrics and I wrote the music. And so I started to, you know, I was getting a bit older and I started to write my own lyrics, really. And so I knew, really, it's better if you write your own lyrics if you're a singer, you know, it's just better.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah,
I started to write my own songs, really. And again, I started to really sort of have a vision of what Billy Idol would be. I think that was partly what happened.
Got you. Okay. So I'm going to take another very short break and then we're going to come up and just, I'll finish up with a, kind of a lightning round with Billy. I want to cover a lot of ground in a short period of time. So stay tuned and we'll be right back with Billy.
Hello, and welcome to Long Time No See, the podcast. Each week, we'll be pairing two blindfolded comedians who've agreed to sit down with a mystery guest. I'll be putting them on the spot with a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Without further ado, please remove your blindfolds and introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Michael.
Hi, Andrea.
I have to be honest with you, I am so relieved to see it's you.
Do you have any irrational fears? What's the worst fad you were into? Is there any job that you would be terrible at?
Underwater welder?
Don't say that about yourself.
Do you guys have any useless talents?
I kicked one of those delivery robots.
What? You kicked one?
Yelling. I kick those all the time.
They have names on them.
Good.
I can make smoke come out of my mouth with nothing.
Do it.
You want to see it?
What the f***? Are you a dragon?
Out now, Long Time No See the Podcast, Season 2. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, we're back with the great Billy Idol. And you were talking at the beginning about punk music and how it impacted you. And you were, the Sex Pistols were a big influence on you, it sounded like. But did you consider yourself to be a punk? Like, were you a hardcore punk?
Well, yeah, I was a punk rocker, but I don't know about hardcore, really, because you know, the people in the bands, we were never as, I don't know if we were ever as, a lot of the audience were a lot more hardcore.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's all they had, really, was we had the music too. So, you know, we're very much musicians who are punks.
Gotcha. Okay.
And you kind of, you don't want to, yeah, there's a lot of sensibilities that come along with playing music that, don't want to just be too one way.
What's your favorite song that you wrote?
Yeah. Generation X, one of them is Kiss Me Deadly. And then, Billy Idol. I mean, I like Prodigal Blues and I like White Wedding and Dancing Myself and Rebel Yell, of course. And I really like Running From the Ghost, one of these new songs. It was really killer. It came out fantastic. It's almost like a mini epic. It's like an epic contained in 4 minutes or something. It's so much goes on in it. It just leaves you at the end when you finished hearing it. It's like I almost don't really – I was stunned when we wrote it. When we finished recording it, I was just kind of going, song doesn't stop. We've never quite written a song quite as – dynamic as it, you know, and that was incredible to be sitting there listening to this song going, man, I don't think I've ever done something, and I've done a lot of music, and to be feeling this kind of, you know, to be feeling this at this stage of the game that, wow, you can still impress yourself.
That's a great thing.
Exciting.
That's a great thing. And what's a song that you wish you wrote?
Oh, God, so many. There's so many great songs that Bowie wrote, or imagine any of those David Bowie songs or Lou Reed songs. There's so many great Lou Reed songs, Velvet Underground songs that were so great. And there's just so many Bowie songs, just fantastic. I mean, you could any of them, really. I mean, God, Space Oddity or any of them, Life on Mars or Lennie's later stuff. Just growing up with Lennon McCartney and then David Bowie was one of the most incredible things in the world. You know, it's like, wow, you know, these great, incredible songwriters that weren't so much older. Well, Bowie was only 10 years. Even the Beatles are only 10 or 12 or 13 years older than me. But so you're growing up with these people that you knew they'd just been schoolboys. They'd just been dreaming of doing it, and they were doing it, you know. So, Strawberry Fields or something. Imagine writing that song. Wow.
Got you. And Billy, if you didn't become Billy Idol, the artist, musician, what do you think you'd be doing?
I don't know. I know, it's a scary thought. might have had to work for my dad, you know, selling power tools or something, you know.
And how did...
or I would have been a teacher or something, maybe a teacher at a university, history teacher or something boring like that, which would have been terrible because I know people are so bored today. Like being a history teacher is the worst thing in the world because people are so bored. They hate history.
And you mentioned teachers, and tell us about how a teacher impacted your name.
Well, that's right. It's really Bill Price, who's the chemistry teacher, my third form chemistry teacher when I'd be 13 or something. He wrote on my report in capital letters. You know, in those days, the teachers, they would write their remarks in longhand, you know, joined up writing. And he wrote in capital letters, William is I-D-L-E, you know, and I've never forgotten that because I knew my dad's going to kill me. And I never forgot that, really. And so at first I was going to be Billy I-D-L-E, you know, like, and then, of course, you know, in England, Eric Idle of Monty Python, that's his real name, you know. So actually kind of, so I had to make a choice. Was I going to be Billy I-D-L-E and be, how can I be like Eric, you know, cop Eric Idle's name or slightly more crazy Billy I-D-O-L and woo, the world's your oyster.
Do you remember that moment when you had that little twist and turned it from Idol, I-D-L-E, to Idol, I-D-O-L?
Yeah, this lady was writing, this lady Caroline Coon for Sounds magazine in England was writing an article about the Sex Pistol fans, the Bromley contingent. I was part of that. And she said, well, what do you want to be called and I said, well, I was being Billy I-D-L-E, but there's Eric Idol, you know. It's his real name. Well, she said, well, you've got 24 hours to figure it out. Call me tomorrow and tell me. So over the 24 hours, I thought about it, and I went, this is crazy. This is crazy. But it's I-D-O-L. And then I've been living with it forever. So
That's like that's a punk moment to take on I-D-O-L. Like that's – you're embracing – you know, that's pretty outstanding. Okay, so, Billy, I got to ask you one thing. What would be something about you that would really surprise your fans? You know, something that they just wouldn't expect about Billy Idol.
Well, I suppose that I really do. I like a lot of historical things. I don't read a lot of novels, but I read a lot of history books. So they're not economic history books or something like that. They're, you know, the stories of kings and queens and whatever. I like a lot of history. Winston Churchill or whoever, you know, I'm quite sort of interested in, I read a lot, you know, they might find that there's a side of me that's quite insular, you know, there's a side of me that's outgoing, but there's a side of me that can sit with a guitar. There's a side of me that can enjoy my own company, really. There's a side, I'm quite happy like that too. So that's probably why I can be, why I can write songs maybe, because I can get with myself and enjoy that experience, you know, and that's kind of what you do when you write songs. You get with a guitar and you just, you enjoy the feelings that are coming out. There's an ooh feeling you get when you get a good line or a good tune. If you're playing your guitar and you're humming away to yourself, you get a physical feeling when something's good. You know, you get an actual warm glow or something. You know, you get a like ooh feeling.
Yeah.
Ooh, wait a minute. Hey, that's not bad. You know, that's what I would have got with, hey, little sister, what a, ooh, that feels good. And start again. Yeah, we need a screamy bit. Yeah, white wedding. And then start again to white wedding, you know.
Hey, Peter.
But I would have been doing that in my little, you know, in that little control room on my own. Somehow that's what I would have been doing, you know, would have been feeling that this ooh. When something's right, you get an ooh feeling that tells you you're on the right track. You know?
And then, Billy, what are you listening to today?
Well, I do listen to like Kendrick Lamar and Pharrell and some Post Malone and some modern artists. But then I mainly listen to old school music or a lot of old reggae. There's a lot of classic reggae you can hear today. I could hear it back in the day, but I couldn't buy it. Or because I didn't have the money, you know, just back in the 70s, when we punk rock, I just didn't have any money. So you're hearing a lot of music you couldn't buy, but now you can find it, stream it, or, you know, so there's so much music that I can listen to that I knew was going on, but I couldn't hear it all. So there's worlds in the past I can visit, and there's music today I can listen to and kind of, you know, groove on it and stuff. And then my son makes music too, Willem. My son, at Willem Wolf, he makes his own EDM kind of chill-out music. And so it's fun hearing what he does as well.
Yeah, I bet. Well, listen, Billy, so right now you are on tour. You have the new EP that's come out, The Cage, or coming out. You have a documentary, I understand, next year that's going to be coming in. We can't wait to see that. And of course, one of the things that you wrote several years ago was your autobiography, Dancing with Myself, which was a New York Times bestseller. And you've also starred in several films. You've been in several films. So you've kind of done it all. But Billy, it's really great to see you. You know, thank you for all your wonderful music. People can't wait to see you on tour, including myself, and listen to the new album. So thanks for joining on The Story Behind the Song.
Oh, well, thank you, Peter. Thank you, everybody.
That was the great Billy Idol sharing the story behind his pop-punk classic, White Wedding. I'm your host, Peter Chatti. You can follow me on Twitter at pchatti. That's P as in Peter, C as in cat, S like Sam, A like Apple, T like Tom, H like Harry, Y like Yellow. And at Creative Media. That's creativemedia.biz. For more of The Story Behind the Song, make sure you like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And tune in on the third Monday of every month for new episodes. Also, make sure you're following the Consequence Podcast Network to keep up to date with all our series at consequence.net/consequence-podcast-network. And as always, thanks for listening to The Story Behind the Song.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.